Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Victoria, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Wednesday, December 12th. We are reading from the Big Book, Chapter 5, How It Works, and we are at page 80, the fourth paragraph, beginning with a sentence, after consulting with his wife and partner. Today's readers are, in the order they will be reading, Michelle, Sharon, Carol P., Judy B., and Fran. The share code for the meeting yesterday, Tuesday, December 11th, is 3486. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. This meeting's primary purpose is to abstain, to recover from compulsive overeating, and to carry this message of recovery to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now call on Anne-Marie to read the 12 steps.
Good morning. This is Anne-Marie, recovered compulsive eater. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our life had become... I'm sorry. Let me start over. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our life had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. I will now call on Margaret K. to read the 12 traditions, please.
Good morning. This is Margaret K. from South Jersey. Number 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group but never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such would never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name would never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, when I pass.
Thanks, Margaret. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, Chapter 5, on page 80, the fourth paragraph, beginning with a sentence, after consulting with his wife and partner. I will ask Michelle to begin reading, please.
Good morning, Victoria. Thank you. This is Michelle, recovered compulsive overeater in Missouri. Good morning, Vision for You. After consulting with his wife and partner, he came to the conclusion that it was better to take those risks than to stand before his Creator guilty of such ruinous slander. He saw that he had to place the outcome in God's hands or he would soon start drinking again, and all would be lost anyhow. He attended church for the first time in many years. After the sermon, he quietly got up and made an explanation. His action met with widespread approval, and today he is one of the most trusted citizens in his town. This all happened years ago. There's really so much in this paragraph. I'm just going to comment about the first two sentences. After consulting his wife and partner, he came to the conclusion that it was better to take those risks than to stand before his Creator guilty of his ruinous slander. And, you know, looking at the paragraph previously to this, you know, I'm hearing self in there and his concern about himself and his reputation and reputation of others. And it seems to me there's a shift coming into this paragraph because now he's willing to consult others. He consulted his wife and partner the same way I would consult my sponsor or I would consult other recovered people in the program. And it takes humility for me to do that because before, you know, approaching these steps, I thought I had all the answers and I was relying on self. And in the previous paragraph, it sounds like there's a little bit of balking, a little bit of hesitation there. Understandably so, he's thinking about himself and what might happen. He's thinking about what the outcome might be. And that just reminded me of the beginning page of this chapter, page 58, when it's you know, telling me, you know, do you want what we have? And if you do, it's asking me, are you willing to go to any length to get it? If I am, then I'm ready to take these steps. But then it says, that some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way. And I did too. And I was working on step 9. There was hesitation. There was some balking. But then, you know, I remembered I wanted what recovered people had. And it says, you know, it reminds me if I try to hold on to these old ideas, the result would be nil. And my old ideas were thinking that I could do this on my own, thinking that my ideas were best. And certainly my old ideas were all about self-reliance and not relying on God. And in working step 9, it does take a shift in humility, which happened to me from accepting directions from my sponsor and actually applying these steps, working these steps, reading the literature and applying them and turning to God, the same way I feel that in this paragraph that's what happened with this gentleman. He got humble, and he's turning to God, and he's seeing that he needed to place the outcome in God's hands. And we learn that is our right position, that God is our employer, God is our director, and just trusting in God. And so I see a shift here, and the same shift is guaranteed to me and to all of us by letting the, you know, just working with a sponsor, working with a recovered person, being willing to take these risks and take these steps. The same thing can happen to me. And they're just sharing these experiences and the possibility of what recovery is going to look like as I take these steps. Thanks for allowing me to share. I'll pass.
Thank you, Michelle. Who else would like to comment on what was just read? Press star 1 to unmute. Someone else like to comment?
Good morning, it's Leah.
Good morning, Leah. Go ahead, please, Leah.
Thank you so much. Good morning, everybody. My name is Leah. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. As I look at this paragraph, you know, I see the same progress, you know, that we make when it comes to the program of recovery in its entirety. You know, you see here at the beginning, this first sentence, after consulting with his wife and partner, he came to the conclusion that it was better to take those risks than to stand before his creator guilty of such ruinous slander. So after discussion and after giving it very serious thought, because obviously this was a very delicate situation, this man came to a conclusion. He came to a conclusion in his mind that it was going to be better to take these risks than to stand before his creator guilty of such ruinous slander. That's, you know, after investigating the matter, after giving it careful discussion and contemplation, he came to that conclusion. Was coming to a conclusion enough? No, it was not enough, because we see the next sentence. He saw that he had to place the outcome in God's hands or he would soon start drinking again and all would be lost anyhow. He was making a decision here. Much like you and I have to make a decision, in step 3, he made a decision as well. He saw that he had to place the outcome in God's hands or he would start drinking again and all would be lost anyhow, you know, because that's the reality with this disease, you know. We either deal with the disease or it will deal with us. That's the bottom line, you know. We're either going to, you know, have this transformation which will expel the obsession of the mind, or else, you know, we will be back in those bags and boxes once again. So he came to a conclusion. He made a decision to put the outcome in God's hands. Is that enough? Is coming to a conclusion and making a decision enough? No, it's not. Because then we see further down, he attended church for the first time in many years. After the sermon, he quietly got up and made an explanation. His action met widespread approval. So it is this this path of conclusion, decision, and action. His action. It wasn't enough that he just made a conclusion. It wasn't enough that he had this conversation with another person and just came to some decision. He actually had to take action. Ninth step, he had to rectify the situation. His action met widespread approval. That's why this chapter is entitled Into Action. It's not entitled, you know, into feeling or into emotion or into wishing or into thinking or, you know, into praying, into contemplating. It's into action. It's these very actions that transform us as people, that spiritually move us towards our goal, our aim, and our objective, which is a spiritual awakening, a personality change sufficient to bring about recovery. It's the same thing with our process. You know, I came to the conclusion of who and what I was. I had an allergy of the body. I had an obsession of the mind. I was powerless over food. My life had become unmanageable. Was that enough to understand my disease? No, it was not. I had to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. Was that enough? Was it enough for me to make a decision, even after coming to the conclusion? No, it was not enough. I had to take action. What are the action steps? The action steps 4 through 9, as given specifically and with clear-cut direction in this big book. And so it's the same process here. Conclusion, decision, action. With that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Leah. Who else would like to comment on this paragraph?
This is Robin.
Good morning, Robin. Good morning, Robin. Go ahead, please, and then Monica.
This is Robin. I'm a compulsive overeater. You know, it takes a lot of courage to do these things. This is a courageous program, and courage to take that leap of faith. And I see it as, you know, I'm reading this paragraph and thinking it's a personal relationship with my higher power. I mean, we talk to people, we go through this stuff, we are honest with our fellows about the things that we've done, and we ask for help, deciding how we should make our amends. But really, the bottom line is, do I want to stand before my Creator clean? I could take the easy way out. I still don't need to take somebody else's guidance, but it's my personal relationship with my higher power that determines what action I'm going to take. And do I want to stand in front of my Creator clean or guilty of such ruinous slander? When I think about the Serenity Prayer, the courage to change, that's what happens when I make a decision and take the action to do something hard, but I'm left with my higher power at the end of the day. And at the end of the day, none of you come with me to the pearly gates. It's just me and my higher power. And how do I want to do that? Do I want to do that with a clean heart, knowing that I did my best in this life, or am I going to take, you know, am I going to take my cred with me? So, personal relationship. Thanks, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Robin. Go ahead, Monica.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. My name is Monica, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. And thank you, Robin. You took the words out of my mouth. Basically, what I was going to say, he saw that he had to place the outcome in God's hands, or he would start drinking again. And you know, the whole reason and process of working through these 12 steps is to get a better relationship, or to even just develop a relationship with God, with our higher power, with God. And it all boils down to trusting and relying on God. And so by step 9 here, we have been working on these steps, and our relationship has been growing, developing, and we see more and more, and the longer you are in this program, it's God, it's God, it's God. Either he is everything or he is nothing. And we do have to put our trust and reliance in him. He's got the master plan, you know. He's the father, we're the child. He's the director, and we're one of the principals here. We're here to do his will. And so, yes, more action here. And here you're so close here. We're doing the 9th step amends. This is the last one of the action steps. And those wonderful promises that we're going to be reading in a few days here on 83 and 84. It says, when will these materialize? They are going to happen before we are halfway through this phase of our development. And what is that phase? It's that 9th step. It's making these amends. This is when the recovery is going to happen. This is when those promises are going to start coming true. So we've got to put our trust and reliance on God and do this, that we want to clean our house. How free do you want to be? You know, are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Let's take the actions. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Monica. Who else would like to share?
This is what
we read. Christy, go ahead, please.
Hi, good morning, Victoria, and good morning, A Vision for You. This is Christy, a recovered compulsive overeater, and unfortunately, I have my own experiences with making a mess out of my life that I needed to clean up. And one that comes to mind in particular is a situation I had, you know, years ago when I was dating someone, and they had agreed to pay for a dream vacation. You know, for us and for me, they'd agreed to pay for the dream vacation for me, and, you know, we were going to go with some friends. And in the heat of the moment, of course, I said, I will pay you back. I'll pay you back, because those are the kinds of things I said. And unfortunately, you know, even though I said that, I had no intention of paying this person back. And, you know, she ended up taking me to small claims court. And, you know, when I was served papers, of course, my first thought was, You shouldn't have done this. You know, you shouldn't have paid for my trip. You should not have loaned me this money. You shouldn't have given me the trip. You know, because that's the way I used to think about my behavior. You know, well, it was her fault, of course, for even offering, and had nothing to do with me agreeing to pay back. And unfortunately, I had to go to small claims court where I still tried to weasel my way out of it. You know, my best thinking just had me digging a hole deeper and deeper and deeper. You know, I still tried to put the blame on her. I still tried to, you know, make it her fault, and you know, tried to make it that I never said that I would pay back. You know, did not take any responsibility for it. And the court of law saw differently, thank goodness. And I mean, really, you know, my wages ended up being garnished, although I did eventually pay her back. And, you know, I had swept the wreckage of myself into a corner, and, you know, it wasn't pretty. It was embarrassing. Deep down inside, it was embarrassing. I knew I was lying, and, you know, it wasn't a good situation. So, again, the money part was taken care of, but the brain part wasn't. You know, I knew that I had done this person wrong. And so, you know, a number of years later after getting into recovery, you know, I could have said, it was water under the bridge. I had paid the person back. It didn't really matter. And in discussion with my sponsor, you know, of course I needed to take care of this. I needed to take care of this. I needed to take care of my side of the street. And, you know, I lived in a different state at the time, but wrote a letter and apologized and had to take into consideration the same kinds of things this person did. You know, what if she sued me again? I mean, I didn't know what the court of law would say about, you know, me admitting or anything like that. I mean, I'd taken care of the money part, but I don't know. You know, but I did, you know, I did talk to my partner at the time about it and say, you know, here's what I did, you know, and here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to apologize for it because I need to take care of it. And it didn't matter what the risks were. It didn't matter what may or may not happen. You know, maybe the person would come back. Who knew? But I knew. I knew I couldn't live with what I'd done. I couldn't live with what I'd done. And it wasn't enough for me to say it was water under the bridge and I'd paid my price and I'd done all of that. I needed to take care of my behavior. I needed to take care of my behavior so my mind could be free. So my mind could be free. And for years after that, you know, before I made amends, I would just shudder at the thought of how I behaved, you know, how I lied. You know, it wasn't pretty, but thank goodness we get the opportunity to clean all that up. So I didn't have to carry it around with me anymore. And I'm just so, so grateful for the opportunity to do that. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Christy. Who else would like to share on this paragraph?
This is Kim.
Kim, good morning. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Victoria. Good morning, my fellows. My name is Kim. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from South Jersey. I just want to look back. What is he making amends for? It says here, while drinking, he accepted a sum of money from a bitterly hated business rival. giving no receipt for it. He subsequently denied having received the money and used the incident as a basis for discrediting the man. So he publicly discredited this man. So what was his amends? His amends wasn't just going to this gentleman and admitting what he did. He attended church for the first time in many years, and after the sermon, he quietly got up and made an explanation. So he publicly humiliated this man, so he publicly made this reparation. And I think this is so powerful, and this is so important, because I think about the times that I let people take blame for things that I did. I think about when I'm a kid. Someone's unmuted. I can hear some background noise, just FYI. Or I used gossip a lot, and I would publicly trash people. So was my amends enough to go and just apologize to someone for letting them take blame for me? Or did I need to go back and make reparation to that person by publicly letting my parents know that I let my brother get grounded for all the food that I ate that I pretended I didn't eat? Or that I trashed friends, and I needed to go back to those friends and said that I made up these stories to try to trash somebody. So I think this is such a powerful story, not because of just what he did, but the understanding that the amends wasn't just admitting his wrong. He had to make right what he did wrong. He publicly discredited this man, and his amends was to publicly admit that. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Kim. This is Victoria, recovered compulsive overeater. I'd like to share on this paragraph. It tells us that it was erroneous slander, the slander against his partner or his partners apparently ruined them. And so this was serious. And one of the obstacles in my way when I worked the 11th step, when I came up on the ninth step, was my sense of terminal uniqueness, that my sense of guilt and shame about things I had done was so large and overwhelming, I could easily convince myself no one else is as bad as I was. And one of the reasons this story was so important to me when I was working my ninth step is because it gave me an example of another alcoholic who caused someone else ruin. It was serious. And at the same time, the action, the destructive action that he took, there was also a path for redemption. And for some years before I really found recovery in this program, I had the promises framed and hanging on my wall. But when I worked this step, the ninth step, it was the first time that I ever repeatedly went back to those promises as a source of strength. That these were promises of what I would receive if I took these actions. Was I going to believe the promises? Or would I believe the promises or not? So I had to get past my sense of terminal uniqueness, that there was nobody as bad as I was. And when we're long enough in the fellowship, we discover that as compulsive eaters, addicts, we have done some very sick things, the wreckage of which we carry. And the Big Book tells us elsewhere that the alcoholic is above all an actor. We present a face to the world which is false, which is untrue. And that's an excruciating split to live with. And I certainly lived with it. I carried this wreckage. And one particular case of harm that I had done, I consulted with my sponsor, I consulted with other recovered people, and I began a faith walk with the God of my understanding to make this amends. The person was out of state. I hadn't had contact with them for several decades. I had no idea if I could find them. I had only a shred of information to begin searching. And at each instance, phone call after phone call, I thought, this can't possibly happen. I can't possibly be led to this person. But I was thrown back onto the second step. Did I believe that I could be restored to sanity and it would be a higher power that did it? And I put it all in God's hands. This ninth step, this experience, was the first time I completely took my hands off the wheel and said, God, you've got it. You're entirely in charge here. The stakes are high, and you are entirely in charge here. And ultimately, I was led miraculously to this individual. And when I showed up to make amends, her husband accompanied her. And I thought, all right, God, it seems to me you intend that I make these amends with her husband present, as deeply personal as they are. And I did that. And as was mentioned earlier in the meeting, all of these actions transformed me. They were transforming me from the inside out, that I, with every instance, I leaned over that cliff and fell into the God of my understanding. Carry me, guide me, direct me. It changed me. It made it possible, after the ninth step, for me to continue to live in a way, trusting that I had never lived before, and trusting that power. That power that that brought about the first miracle of removing the food obsession, that I could lean into that same power for cleaning up wreckage I believed would be with me for the rest of my life, so that once again I could become trusted. Well, I had no idea of how that meeting would come out. That meeting, that ninth step amends, became many miracles in the space of 1.5 hours, and I was so clear I was not in charge. I was simply taking the action. With that, I'll pass. Who else would like to comment on this paragraph? Is there anyone else who would like to comment on this paragraph? Press star 1 to unmute. All right, if not, we will move on to the next paragraph. Sharon, would you read, please?
Good morning. This is Sharon, recovered compulsive overeater. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around at in the nightclubs, or their equivalent, for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret, an exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? a man so involved often feels very remorseful. At times, especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. And this is very interesting, and I think a higher power has a sense of humor that he gives me this particular paragraph to read and share some words about. The chances are we have domestic troubles, and quite frankly, how could we not? If our focus is completely on our food and everything else is secondary to it, those people in our lives are bound to feel that and bound to get some resentments and perhaps even as we begin to recover, resentments continue to build, because then our focus is on our recovery, on our program, on those relationships that are going to help us to recover. In my case, I also carried around resentment. I was so resentful that it was difficult for me to handle my step nine. It was difficult for me to see my partner's, what I had done, because I was had such deep resentments from years and years of holding stuff in. And so for me to get through that step nine was like chiseling, and it was like going to God, and it was like getting glimpses of how that other person, how my partner had to have seen things. And I really had to get close to what my part was. So this was grueling for me, but I stuck with it. And quite honest, I could tell that story about what my partner had done in such a way that I could get everybody's sympathy, just about. Except that I had a partner that kept me focused on my side of the street. And I think I got to a point where I talked about my situation so much that people would just say, leave, so I don't have to hear this anymore. But I had to stick with it because of one thing. Somehow or other, my higher power had a grip of my heart in such a way that I knew that even though I couldn't see my part, that for me to leave, the problem would come with me, because the problem was in me. And that somehow or other, by the grace of God, I could get through this, that I could see from his point of view how I had hurt him, how it was me that had created these problems. And so I had to continue to work on the big book. And I think I had to make that first amends, knowing that in my heart I felt wounded, I felt hurt, and I had to set that aside, and I had to really look at how I had hurt. And even though initially I really couldn't see it, but I know that there was things that I had done that had caused harm. So I had to make amends for what I could accept. And I had to just continue to allow myself to be open to my God, to show me, to reveal to me in the midst of the pain that I was feeling, what my part in this damaging of him was. And I knew it was there. And so I had to just stick with it. And in all honesty, I want to say it magically happened just with my wanting it to happen. But in all honesty, it took years, because in some ways we kept offending back and forth, even in the midst of trying to get clean, to do my part. There was still injury taking place because we had those patterns. The patterns and the dueling and the back and forth and the old way of doing things and the old way of reacting, and until I could just not only accept responsibility for what I had done, I had to be the grown up in the room. I had to be the recovered one and make those first moves, even in the midst of continuing to feel hurt. I had to reach out and trust God to be with me. I had to be the big person. And then I just saw walls crumbling, and I saw that the amends, which I had to have an attitude of a step nine attitude as I lived my life daily, you know, daily making amends. And as I continued in this process, then I saw the walls come down, and I saw that the promises that we're going to talk about later. But this whole thing is a process, has been a process, continues to be a process, and I have to stay in this attitude of holding on to my higher power and making sure that I daily do my part and see where I am hurting and offending and taking a new way of looking at life. And that's what it's had to take for me to work this out with the person closest to me in this life. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Sharon. Would someone else care to comment on what was just read?
This is Kate. May I share?
Yes, Kate. Go ahead, please.
Hi. What I was drawn to is after a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? And it reminds me of, you know, how our interpersonal relationships are hurt when we're in the disease, and the lies and the, you know, sneaking around to get to a binge and be alone with our food. What I would do to make sure that other people, you know, just weren't there, so that I could be alone with my disease, and the good people that I have around in my life, my family members that I've hurt, so that I could get my food. And you know, as I'm reading through this and, you know, feeling, just feeling for them and how I can relate this in my program is, like, you know, the people in my life who have stood by me and who have seen me go through this, like, those are the people today that I need to, like, treat better and love fuller and be kinder to with my higher power, because, you know, now that I'm living a life without constantly being, you know, binging and sneaking around, like, I can be more present for them when they need me to. I can be a better sister and daughter and family member, fiance, than when I'm in the food. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Kate. Who else would like to share in what was read?
This is Lois.
Did
you
hear you?
Lois, go ahead, please.
Okay, good morning, Victoria. Yes, I can relate to this, all of this paragraph. I was in a marriage to an alcoholic who had not recovered. I was a compulsive overeater who had all of my own resentments and loneliness and anger and in going through these steps, and this was an ex-husband at this point in my life, who had still not recovered and who was still very, very angry, resentful in all of the family situations as well. So he was, it was a very troubled amends that I was trying to look at. And it was very difficult for me to look for my part in this because we had so many years of being tangled up in disease and alcoholism that, it took me, this was one of my hardest ones. And I did work through this with my, I mean, I did include my sponsor with this. I asked God for help, and she kept, reminding me that I was willing to go to any length. And I had such fear, and in doing this, this person would not meet with me personally. So I, with my sponsors and God's help, I composed a letter and found a way, that I could sincerely see my part in this and to write a brief, amends to this person. And, with God's help and with a lot of fear, I did this and I put it in the mail, very, very scared. I had tried to do some of this before and I it was not well received at all. I was ridiculed and so, it brought back a very negative response. So, this time it was a much more true, and I had a lot of more integrity and I could really feel, sorry. And I wrote that and I hope it was, received that way. But I learned here that, there's no guarantee how it'll be received. It's important that I do this. This is for me to take responsibility. So I did that. And, a couple of weeks went by, and it was not well received. It was very badly received, in fact. A big, fat package came in the mail with all kinds of letters. But I could see that this person still was, he was a very sick man. So, I just said the sick man's prayer and continued to do that. 2 years later, this person died. My ex-husband died. And I had a really wonderful sense of release because I know that I had offered to meet with this person. I had told him how sorry I was for certain things in our relationship, and I know that I had done I would have done more if he had allowed me to. So I was free. When this person died, I was free. I said prayers for him. And I still look forward to, in the afterworld, that someday that we'll all be together and as we once were. So thank you. And with that, I'm going to pass.
Thank you, Lois. Would someone else care to comment on the paragraph that was read?
This is Anne Marie.
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite make out your name.
Anne Marie, I have a cold.
Anne Marie, go ahead, please, Anne Marie.
Okay, thank you so much. I just appreciate all what Lois has just said. I had just about the same response, the same experience with my ex-husband, and he hasn't passed away yet, but the freedom that I got from it. And, I walked through that fear, and I didn't walk through the fear alone. I walked through that experience with my sponsor, with a recovered compulsive eater. And I, too, wrote out the letter, and I read it to her first and prayed about it. And this took some time. I learned, in this ninth step not to be impulsive with these more serious amends I needed to make. It took time. I needed to seriously pray, rely on God, and use the person that God put in my life at the time to help me with this. And even though it wasn't received the way that I was hoping it would, I received a very nasty email back. In fact, I had to mail this without a return address because this man is, I think he still is, dangerous to me. But he somehow found, he found me on Facebook. That's how he found me and sent me a a notice on Facebook. And I had compassion. I was surprised that, it wasn't anger and I'm going to get him back and I'm going to, I didn't respond to his, his response to me. Instead, I did that prayer on page 67, so to prevent me from being angry. And and I wasn't angry. I could see this man is still very sick. God help him, and I can see now why they say turnaround. I had a question one time. Why do they call it turnaround? I could see what a turnaround it was for me to be able to see this man in a different light. I saw him as a monster before. And I now see him as one of God's children who's very sick. So it did a lot for me. So thank you.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. Would someone else like to share before we move on? All right, let's move on to the next paragraph. Carol P., would you read, please?
Yes. Good morning, Victoria. Good morning, A Vision for You, Carol P., compulsive overeater. Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we are sure our wife does not know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we have been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our own fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take. And I would briefly like to share on that. The we have found this the best course to take are the recovered people. And there's clear directions of how to do this. There's a few ifs and a lot of we's. I do not buy my own peace of mind at the expense of others by, saying things I shouldn't say. And it doesn't lighten my burden when I recklessly make the crosses of others heavier. Definitely working with a recovered sponsor, God, a lot of prayer here, and, we just don't go alone. So with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Who else would like to comment on what was just read? Press star 1 to unmute. Well, this is Victoria, compulsive overeater. I'll comment briefly on this. This theme of sexual infidelity that is discussed on this page, for me and perhaps for others, it might be easy to say, well, never did that, although I'm sure many of us did. The way I relate to what's on this page in terms of the infidelity is a breaking of trust. It is a breaking of trust with someone who is close to me, who is very close to me, and breaking of that trust in a deep way so that it is highly injurious to that other person. And in my very self-centered state, which I inevitably would be practicing my disease for as many years as I did and feeling like a victim of life, plenty of self-pity for me, it required the beginning of a psychic change for me to be able to see myself clearly and how deeply injurious the breaking of trust with another human being, especially one in intimate relationship, is, and how long-term those consequences can be. As it, the big book says earlier, we often set in motion ourselves the trouble, which then comes back to haunt us later. With that, I'll pass. Would someone else like to share on what was read? Press star 1 to unmute. I want to make a mic check here. Are you, Leah, are you hearing me on the line?
Yes.
Is anybody hearing me? Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Okay. Good.
Yes. I'll go ahead and share briefly. Yes. My name is Leah. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Just briefly here, we are sorry for what we have done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. You know, the big book makes it clear here to be cautious when making these amends, particularly in these very delicate, sensitive situations, because the truth can be used to injure as well as to heal. So this is where the guidance of a recovered sponsor comes in, because these are situations which are deeply painful, not only to ourselves, but to other people. There's no statute of limitations on broken hearts. And, you know, for those of us that are coming out of the grips of addiction, you know, there were food stains all over my relationships because of my behavior and my self-will run riot and my instincts out of control. And those selfish, inconsiderate habits of mine kept my home in turmoil, and all those relationships that I had been involved in, you know, had created pain. So the program of recovery, well, you know, it comes along and it brings about the opportunity to take responsibility for my behavior, take responsibility for my actions, take responsibility for my thinking, because all action is born in thought. The program of recovery helped to develop my maturity and my emotional, you know, maturity, and realizing that, you know, this program of recovery, it can bring harmony to three major relationships. Number one, harmony with my relationship with God by realizing there is a God, and Leah, you are not it. You know, harmony with myself, meaning this is the way I've been thinking. These are my attitudes. These are my ideas. These are my emotions, and they are no longer working for me. And so the program of recovery through these action steps allowed me to take a look at those attitudes and ideas that were creating so much conflict and collision in my life. And through the program of recovery, those old ideas and those worn-out attitudes were cast to one side. And of course, through the transformation, we're brought back into harmony with other people. That, you know, I take responsibility for this, take responsibility that the lack of emotional intimacy and the lack of physical intimacy in my marriage, for instance, created pain in other, in another person, and to take responsibility for that. That this program of recovery is life-changing, life-transforming. These steps tear down that prison that had been built around me, and the character building is actually accomplished by first tearing down and getting rid of those attitudes and ideas. And what remains after this tearing down process is what we're after. What remains is that spiritual light that resides in each and every one of us and can allow us to be finally walking humbly and gracefully and usefully under the mercy of God. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Leah. Thank you to everyone who has shared. We will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Judy B., would you please read A Vision for You?
Certainly. This is Judy B., a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.